Arctic Winter Games is a biennial event celebrating the sports and culture of the people who live in the circumpolar north. Delegations from Alaska, northern Canada, Greenland, and northern Scandinavia gather to compete in 21 different sports and share their cultures with one another. This year, it's Alaska's turn to host the Arctic Winter Games, which will take place during the school spring break, March 10th through 16th, in the Mat-Su Valley. I'm really interested in what's in store for us at this year's Games, so I invited two members of the organizing committee into the studio to talk about it. My guests include Amy Spargo, the chair of the Arctic Winter Games Board, and Telsha Overby, the Arts and Culture Program Director. So stick around with me, your host, Adam Verrier, and find out more about this year's Arctic Winter Games here on Outdoor Explorer. Welcome back. I'm Adam Verrier, your host here on Outdoor Explorer, and today I'm speaking with Amy Spargo and Telsha Overby about the Arctic Winter Games to be held this year in the Mat-Su Valley. Amy Spargo and Telsha Overby, thank you for coming in, joining me.
Oh, we're super excited that you invited us in.
Thanks for having us, Adam.
Yeah, I've just come from a ski jumping event, one of my other favorite winter sports, but Arctic Winter Games. We have a lot of sports here in Alaska that are interesting and fun around this time of year in March. But Arctic Winter Games has to be just about my favorite event that happens. It only happens every 2 years. Amy, would you like to tell us a little bit about Arctic Winter Games for anybody who might not be familiar with this big event?
Absolutely. Well, I think a lot of Alaskans kind of lose sight of Arctic Winter Games because it only comes to Alaska about every 10 years. So the last time Arctic Winter Games were in Alaska was 2014 up in Fairbanks. And the Mat-Su and the central Anchorage region, we've actually never hosted before. So in the late 90s, it was in Chugiak. It was down in the Kenai. But this is a first for our region. So we're super excited. The Arctic Winter Games have been around for over 50 years. They started in the 1970s, early 70s in Yellowknife, and have, like you said, happened every couple years. They've grown. There were 500 participants in the beginning. We're up to 2,000 participants. So hosting has become quite a multi-year planning endeavor.
What other, the Arctic Winter Games moves around the north, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. And I will say right now, I've been to two Arctic Winter Games, but they were both in the same place in Greenland.
Oh.
But I do know that the Arctic Winter Games moves through northern Canada, and it's always moving from place to place. You said it's been, the last Arctic Winter Games was in Anchorage, or in
Fairbanks,
in Alaska, in Fairbanks, in 2014. Where was the last Arctic Winter Games held?
So, of course, the pandemic in 2020, the Arctic Winter Games were scheduled to be in Whitehorse, Yukon. And literally 48 hours before they opened, they had to cancel the Arctic Winter Games. And then in 2022, they were scheduled to be in Fort McMurray, Wood Buffalo in northern Alberta. And they also got canceled and delayed in 2022. So the last Arctic Winter Games for the first time in 5 years was in Fort McMurray, Wood Buffalo, northern Alberta in 2023, last January. And I personally had been working with a team of volunteers for about a year and a half by then, and we'd never been to an Arctic Winter Games. So our whole group of 14 went to Wood Buffalo. It was 40 below for a whole week, and that was our first experience, and it was magical. It was absolutely magical, and I think if it wouldn't have been for that experience, it wouldn't keep our drive going in this home stretch here of all the planning that we're doing.
And so you guys must be really busy right now.
We are. There's a lot of logistical things that, even though there has been good planning and more lists than a person could even imagine, there's still surprises and changes in things. So our group, we have grown from a volunteer board of 14 to we have a staff of around 15 and multiple part-time people. And so they are working around the clock right now, making sure that we are ready. Part of our preparation is that we have to plan for not just the travel, but the housing, the feeding, the transportation, and then all the things that the participants do while they're here, like the sports and the culture and activities that are fun and activities for the community. So it really is a comprehensive plan that has taken lots of folks to pull together, lots of really good-hearted people.
Well, it's a really big event, and it involves not only sports but cultural events, arts and culture, because this is a big cultural. It's an opportunity for a big cultural exchange, I would think.
Absolutely. Yeah. One thing that I've been thinking about as the two of you have been speaking is how impossible it seemed to fill 2 years of planning for a 1 week sporting and cultural event. But I came on staff almost exactly 2 years ago, full time, to support the planning for this event. And I was able to go to Wood Buffalo as well in January of last year to see how their planning commenced and how everything came together for this scale of an event. And I will say that was an eye-opening experience for me to see what it is that takes that amount of time in planning and preparation to host an event of this scale. How that relates to the cultural program in particular is that relationships don't happen overnight. And so the first year of my position was really relationship building and research and program implementation, deciding how we were going to go about working with all of these different contingents and all of the communities that we were looking to engage. And then starting in spring probably of last year, implementing some of those planning pieces and starting to meet with people and get ideas for how they wanted to engage with this week of events and putting those plans from other folks into action. And honestly, with roughly a week left to go, we're still doing that. We are still taking people's ideas for how they want to experience the Arctic Winter Games here in the Matsu and putting those ideas into action. An example I'll give is that we are adding to our participant activity schedule a fiddle dance evening on Monday night because of an idea that's been brewing with community members here, but hadn't been solidified until very recently. So especially in the cultural world, things are not always block schedules and spreadsheets, but more tea times and looking at artistic projects and plans and vision boards and thinking about how the community can be engaged in a meaningful way.
Well, you were talking about these contingents that are coming to the Arctic Winter Games, and the Arctic Winter Games contingents come from all around the circumpolar north, including, I have a list here that I wrote down. We've got the Alaska team, obviously, and there's Northwest Territories, there's the Yukon Territory, Nunavut, Northern Alberta, Nunavik, and Quebec, Nunavik being Northern Quebec, if I understand that correct. Kalaallit Nunaat, I'm not sure if I said that right. You might, okay, it's maybe good. I'm not far off, but that is the local name for Greenland that are used by Greenlandic people. And the Sami, people from northern Scandinavia. You've got so many cultural influences coming from all around the world. How do you... That has got to be a huge... You've already said that you spent 2 years working on this. Mm. I mean, that's a huge amount of influences coming from across the globe. And you're trying to incorporate, I suppose, into the cultural events, the cultural program that you're running for this event.
Yes, absolutely. And it's incredibly eye-opening and fun to see the ways in which Northern cultural communities are similar and very, very different. And the vast diversity that exists even in the North itself, right? So incorporating all of these teams from all over the world into one cultural program, I think is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Mat-Su community members to come out and see cultural representation from those places, and also allow them to see a bit of what's unifying between all of our places across the circumpolar north, and get a little bit of a sense of camaraderie.
Yeah, I would think that that's something that there's problems. There's advantages that we all have in the north, and there's problems that we all face. I mean, global warming, for example, is going to affect people from the north differently than it affects people from the equatorial regions. Mm. And culturally, there's, as you said, a lot of similarities, but also some differences. I mean, the people of northern Scandinavia are... they're on the other side of the world from us. I think it's a 10-hour time difference, so almost on the other side of the globe. So certainly some differences there. Is the cultural events, the cultural program that you have, is that a little bit more Alaska-centric because Arctic Winter Games is in Alaska? Or is there a big component from other, are there other performers, are there other people coming in to do programs from other regions?
Interesting question, and there's a little bit of a dual answer there. The cultural program is two things. It is the inward cultural program, which is the 21st sport. So there are 20 sports in the Arctic Winter Games, many of which you would expect, some of which are new to folks around here. And then the 21st sport is actually culture. So each of the contingents brings a team of 3 to 6 individuals who are here representing their team of culture, like another team might be the badminton team. Those youth are not competitive. They're not competing against one another. They're spending the week in collaboration, skill sharing, doing workshops, and then working on their final performance piece that culminates in the cultural gala on Friday, March 15th. So that internal cultural program is representation from each of the contingents coming together, working, skill sharing, doing workshops, rehearsing all week. While everyone else is out there competing for ulus, the cultural teams are working together on this final project, right? And instead of a gold, silver, or bronze medal for their hard work, we're giving them this time individually beaded medallions from community members around the state of Alaska. Now, those community members are part of this outward-facing cultural program that we've been working on as part of our Mat-Su 2024 Arctic Winter Games. And in that scenario, you are right, it is slightly more Alaskan-centric. However, we have made attempts to broaden it so that we are not necessarily beholden to any geographical boundaries, but really engaging with our communities and partners as much as we're able to across that circumpolar north area. So, for example, we're having a fashion show, and there are designers coming from Watson Lake and Whitehorse, as well as other parts of the state of Alaska, Bethel and Anchorage and other communities. The medallion beaters, there was a call put out statewide. And so we're getting medallion beaters in to participate from across the state, and they're doing their own styles and techniques of beadwork and submitting those to go to the cultural participants. In some cases, the musicians, for example, they come from a variety of locations around the state and some outside of the state. The drummers for the Dene Games are coming from Whitehorse, from Yukon Territory. It's a smorgasbord, right, yeah, of all different communities represented and all different styles.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you one fun example. Okay. And that is that in the culture, that internal cultural program where the kids are working together, or the young people are working together all week. Some are not under the age of 18 because, again, in cultural, there's no competition. So we don't have the same restrictive age categories that some of the other sports do. And some do not. Some sports do not. Culture is one of those that doesn't have restrictive age categories in the same way. So in the internal cultural program that we're working on all week, where those young people are coming together and skill sharing, there was an expression of an interest in drumming styles. So a commonality amongst many communities of the North is drum and song and dance. But there are many, many, many varieties of that. And so we've incorporated into the cultural program to have intro to Yupik drumming and Inuit style drumming and skill sharing across styles and techniques of drumming, something that I am not an expert on, but these individuals coming from all over are experts in their own way and culture bearers coming to share their skills with one another. So that's something I'm really, really excited to be able to help support.
Right. Yeah. So these groups can almost sort of give drum clinics to other groups. Hey, here's something you might not know how to do. And this is the way we do it. And you might want to check this out. And
yes.
You might like it.
Yeah. Yes.
How does a person, I don't want to get too far into the weeds on some of this, but if you're thinking, well, I'm not on the cultural team this year, but I'm involved in a cultural, in some aspect of culture, I'd like to be involved in the Arctic Winter Games in the future. Do you get on one of these teams through submitting an application? It's not a tryout, obviously, but I wouldn't think.
So the Arctic Winter Games really is made up of a triad of groups. There's the contingents, which are nonprofits in each of their regions. So Alaska has Team Alaska. And then there's the host society, and whatever community gets the bid forms a host society and hires the staff. And then there's the Arctic Winter Games International Committee. And if you wanted to be a part of a cultural contingent, you would actually work with Team Alaska in Alaska, not with the host society. And every year they put out a call, and then they have coaches and sponsors who are in charge of viewing all those different groups and choosing who they're going to take or to be the representative. So we didn't make that selection this year. It's all coming through Team Alaska, and we're super excited to see who they've brought and what that's going to be.
Right. Yeah. Because you're just the organizers. Team Alaska is the competitive, or in the case of culture, the
performative.
Performative.
There
yeah.
You go.
You've been using this terminology longer than, being involved in this event. I'm still working on getting up to speed on the Arctic Winter Games. We have 21, you could say sports, but 20 of them are competitive sports, and the 21st is not. When it comes to competitive sports, I'm looking at the list here. I've got my computer on. We've got Arctic sports. We have Dene games. But we have sports ranging from badminton and basketball to biathlon, curling. We have figure skating. It's a wide range of sports. I've been involved personally in cross-country skiing at the Arctic Winter Games as a coach. How are the sports selected for the Arctic Winter Games? Are they always the same in every Arctic Winter Games, or is the selection of the sports that's used in Arctic Winter Games partially dependent on what's available for infrastructure in the place?
Certainly, it's a great question, Adam, and that is how it goes. You know, we know that in Alaskan communities, often schools become the hub of community life or public buildings. And so a lot of the sports in Arctic Winter Games are traditional indoor sports that are played in these community hubs in the winter. So in Alaska, especially, we think of basketball, volleyball, wrestling. We don't have as many competitive table tennis and badminton teams, but that's pretty typical in other places. And one of the best things about bringing Arctic Winter Games is it exposes people to these youth activities that have room to grow. So the Mat-Su doesn't have a biathlon range. We had hoped in our best thinking that somehow hosting Arctic Winter Games might result in a biathlon range being built. That was a little too much infrastructure for us to take on with our group. So we are using Kincaid here in Anchorage, which is a world-class venue. But we are hoping that as people participate in biathlon and see biathlon from the Mat-Su, that there would be enough interest that in time that would be something that grows. So the sports are really traditional Alaskan outdoor sports and indoor sports. Everything you can do on ice, everything you can do in the snow. And then the Arctic and Dene sports, Arctic sports and Dene games are kind of a combination of sport and culture. And like Talsha mentioned, they don't have an age limit. There's a mentoring process there. So there's adult participants and youth participants. There are feats of both strength and balance and as well as cultural celebrations. I'm reminded of the hand games, which are part of the Arctic sports, which are Inuit sports, where the participants are seated and they have a robe over their laps and their hands are underneath, and there's drummers and they use hand gestures and they're trying to guess how many sticks the other team has underneath this robe. And there's fake outs and it's quite dramatic, and there's a lot of cheering people on. And so that's where these drummers who are coming from Yukon, they're actually coming to be the rhythm section of the hand games. And they're crowd favorites, really fun to watch. If anyone gets a chance, make your way to that, because it's got a lot of energy and people are really into it. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a game, really, though.
Yeah.
It's something you're not going to see. It's not part of the anchor of the Alaska School Sports Association. It's not part of the ASA. It's not one of the ASA games. It's not going to be played beside the football game or the basketball game down at West High School.
No.
So, completely unique. And I would think that it's a real learning experience for people, that they maybe just walk into one of those events and, well, what have we here?
And you can hear it from outside the building. It's so the drumming, and there's so much energy in it.
Well, you had mentioned that schools are a central part of the communities in these areas, and that a lot of the sports is centered around schools. Are you using schools for lodging for the athletes? That's common. Is that happening here also?
It is. The Matsu Borough School District's been an amazing partner for us. They have granted us facility use and changed their school calendar so that we have an extra day on either end of spring break. And so we have six schools that we are using as villages, and we've named them with indigenous place names. So Bente, Nuta, and Iklutna are our three campuses, and they're high school and middle school campuses. And we're taking schools, emptying classrooms, and turning them into dormitories. So we've bought 2,000 beds, single beds, which we will be selling after the games. I might say that two or three times while I'm on the radio. We're turning them into cafeteria. The cafeterias are going to be serving food. The classrooms are going to be places where the teams stay. And then we're using most of those gyms as well for competitions. So Wasilla High is a village school, Bente One. It is also where basketball's, the tournament's going to happen. So,
okay, the money that it takes to run an event like this, of course, is it's a lot of money. I think we see every 4 years when there's an Olympics. It doesn't take much research to find out how much money it takes to put on an Olympic Games, for example. The Arctic Winter Games is a smaller version, but a similar version in that both the Olympic Games or the Commonwealth Games, Pan American Games, these types of things, most of them have a cultural component in addition to the sporting component. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that it sounds like Arctic Winter Games can do to reduce the cost is to use schools. You know, I know that in traveling in rural Alaska, as I think it's the same traveling all over the rural north, whether it be Greenland or northern Canada, schools are used for more than just education. You get stuck in somewhere in western Alaska or in northern Canada someplace, you may find yourself sleeping in a classroom. That's just the way it is when you don't have a whole bunch of Motel 6s around. So it seems fitting that schools would be used for lodging at the Arctic Winter Games.
And really, in the Matsu, we are the fastest growing region of Alaska and rapidly becoming a tourist destination. But we simply don't have enough hotel beds where we could have housed the participants. We have filled every single hotel bed and lodge bed and almost every VRBO with just the visiting parents, our performers, our officials, our staff that are coming from all around the circumpolar north. So there was no way we could have put the kids also in commercial settings. So we had to build that out. Yeah.
Yeah. Even in a community in which there's probably more infrastructure than almost any other Arctic Winter Games host location. I think about when I went to Nuuk for the Arctic Winter Games. Nuuk is a smaller place than the Matsu Valley by a considerable amount. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA. And today we're talking about the Arctic Winter Games with Amy Spargo and Telsha Overby. We'll be right back after a short break.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.com.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Adam Verrier, and today we're talking about the Arctic Winter Games with Amy Spargo and Telsha Overby, members of the organizing committee for this year's games. We were just talking about lodging and some of the logistics that go into hosting an event of this size. How do people get around? I don't imagine everybody rents cars and drives around.
Yeah, it's been a super big challenge. And luckily, we have one of the greatest brains of the Matsu Valley on it, Anjanette Steer. And she is, and if you're in the cross country world, I'm sure you know her.
I know Anjanette.
She is our director of care and comfort, and she's the perfect person for the job because she is one of the most organized and forward-thinking people I've met. And so she has worked out a system with Premier Alaska, who has been a wonderful partner in this. And they have charter buses. So the contingents are actually chartering planes. We've taken over the whole north terminal of the Alaska because everyone who's coming is an international traveler. Alaska's already here. So we have been given access to the whole terminal. And we have 17 charter flights coming in. Some of the contingents are even bringing charter flights of parents, which is we're very excited about. And so she's got buses that pick everybody up. There's routes that will run every 30 minutes. So it's like a trial run of what a public transportation system would look like in the Matsu. It's really remarkable. And the buses run every 30 minutes between all the venues. There's special shuttles out to Ski Talk, which is, you know, up Hatcher Pass, towards Hatcher Pass. And then there's a van service, and then there's a motor pool on top of that, where we've had great support from Avis, who has donated cars that we can use as our motor pool. So all of our special guests and government officials will have the availability of someone driving them around if they need to have pickups and drop-offs and those kinds of things. And so the transportation has been expensive, maybe one of the most expensive pieces of the whole thing. And I think in Alaska, especially the Matsu, where even just transporting kids to school is super challenging. Planning for this kind of an event where all of our venues are so spread out, the transportation has been just a lot of details. One of the things that we've done is we're housing the participants close to the venue where they're going to be competing, so they can walk to the venue. So that's made things simpler. So if you're playing futsal, which futsal is not a sport that we're all familiar with, but when I saw it in Wood Buffalo, I thought of it like if hockey and soccer had a baby. It would be, it's a very physical, fast-moving indoor in a gym soccer game where they check and do things like hockey.
Oh, I didn't realize there was checking.
It's very physical.
Oh, wow.
It's very physical. It's probably not called that, but that's what it looks like when you're not looking at it and you're not used to seeing it. But so that's going to be at Palmer High, which is actually our largest sport. We have the most participants enrolled in futsal of any of the sports, and because it's a team sport. And so all those people are staying right at Palmer High. So we don't have to bus them anywhere. They just go downstairs and play.
Okay. So if you are on the, for example, the Northern Alberta futsal team, you will be staying in that location with the Yukon and the Alaska and the Greenlandic futsal players. And the cross-country skiers might stay somewhere else, but the different teams staying in the same school.
Right. So contingents aren't housed by school. Teams are, which is great because one of the main goals of this is relationship building and friendship building. And so the kids who will be doing the same activities in warm-ups and this sharing the same space and competing against each other will also be having meals together and seeing each other in the common areas and having a chance to hang out. So it really does foster friendship and relationship building.
Oh, that's really interesting, especially the transportation component. I was a member of an Olympic team in 1994. It was the Olympics that was held in Lillehammer, Norway, and I know that the Norwegian organizers, the organizing committee for that Olympics, was very nervous about the transportation component, and it was the thing that they were probably most nervous about, and it was also the thing that leading into that Olympics, there were a lot of people publicly saying, we're going to mess this up. Like, this is going to be a disaster. We're a little country. We probably aren't going to pull it off. And there was a lot of nervousness. But what they did was they shut down the town from basically 5 or 6 a.m. until 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And they said, you're not allowed to drive cars on the street. And we're going to run these buses all over town. We're bringing buses from all over Norway. And there's going to be buses going everywhere to every place. And everybody gets a free ride on the bus, but you can't drive a car. And for the locals, because that's a city of 25,000 people, those people could then go out after 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night, whenever they opened up the road. They also were leaving the grocery stores open at night. So locals, if they wanted to go shopping for groceries, it had to happen at midnight, basically.
Wow.
And they could drive their cars around. But during the day, it was only buses. And so it sounds like for you guys, you shared a look when we were talking about transportation. I get the impression that this was also a tough nut to crack also. It took a lot of planning.
So most recently, we've had these collaborative meetings with the Department of Transportation from the state of Alaska and all the law enforcement agencies and all the city works people from Palmer and Wasilla and the borough, and talked about what is our schedule, what is our peak time that we're going to be on the road. We've met with all the public information officers. We're trying to get word out to people that, you know, opening ceremonies is going to happen at people will be there by 3:30 p.m. on Sunday, March 10th. Do not be on the road unless you're going to opening ceremonies in the 2 hours before opening ceremonies. It's going to be a nightmare, and you're going to be really frustrated, and it's going to make people for opening ceremonies late. So we're working with all of our public information people to try to get the word out. You know, we have a winter carnival happening, and we've all been caught in fair traffic before, and we anticipate that it could be like fair traffic for the winter carnival because it's free. It's spring break for Anchorage and the Valley, and we are hoping that we line them up down the Glen Highway, that they want to come out to the Valley and see what we've got going on for the winter carnival and ride the rides. And but the roads, if you're not going to the winter carnival, you might not want to be on the Glen Highway then.
Right. We talked a little bit about that. I mean, it costs a lot of money to put one of these events on, but there's also benefits that come out of it beyond the cultural and the cross-cultural and the sporting benefits and the you know, all the intrinsic, the benefits that you get out of an event like this. Is there infrastructure that's left behind? I'm going back to the Olympics. Sometimes you get these places that host the Olympics and they pour a lot of concrete. And sometimes that doesn't ever get used again. Or in other cases, it's they're really happy to have had the Olympics to have the excuse to build up this infrastructure. You said earlier that you were hoping to get a biathlon range out of it. That didn't quite come together. Are there other things that got built for the Arctic Winter Games? Is it that big an event that it actually causes things to get built in the Mat-Su?
I'll talk about some of the legacy items that we're working with in general, and then I think there's some intangible legacy things that Telsha could talk about too that are equally as valuable. So simple things like Ski Talk's a pretty new alpine ski area. They needed better connectivity. And so same with GPRA, Government Peak Recreation Area. Beautiful facilities, venues we want everyone to come out and see, like, hey, there's great winter recreation in the valley. But MTA, we had to partner with them to put in, they were another great partner, put in better connectivity there and in the Menard Center so that we can live stream. All of our results, you know, are electronic now and have to be transmitted through the internet. So there had to be connectivity all the way up the mountain. And so those are permanent improvements in those areas. At Government Peak Recreational Area, the borough put in a second parking lot. And when they improved the parking area, they also improved the stadium. The contractor was able to use the gravel from building the parking lot to improve the stadium so that we can do larger mass starts and then have more space for viewing there on finishes. So those are things that have gotten better.
Yeah, and Government Peak is a place that I've, you know, I've seen it growing and improving. And I saw that they had done that, a lot of work had been done this summer. And
yeah,
those are the sort of legacy improvements, I guess, that that remain.
The track and speed skating pads, I think, are an exciting one.
Yeah, the Host Society purchased short track speed skating pads for the Mac Center, which they haven't had in a long time. And there is a speed skating club that's active in Anchorage. And we're gifting them to them after the games as a legacy project so that hopefully that club will grow and have more accessibility for people to practice with those pads.
I know they'll be happy to have those. I do a lot of speed skating myself, I know that they'll be happy to have those pads. And then culturally, are there things that are that the Arctic Winter Games brings to the region are there legacy impacts of the cultural events that happen at the Arctic Winter Games?
100%. So I'm glad that you brought this up, this intangible feeling that's left behind after the Arctic Winter Games comes and goes from a community. And it's something we've been talking about at length since the beginning of our planning process. And because I was able to join the team relatively early, I was able to sit in on some of those foundational conversations amongst the board and get a feeling for what the Mat-Su community really hoped to gain from at least the cultural programming part and the event overall in terms of lasting legacy in community change and community mind change, right? And for a long time, we've said that we hope at the bare minimum that visitors from mostly our Central Alaskan visitors, our Mat-Su residents, our Anchorage residents, come out for these events and allow themselves to interact with other folks or to see cultural events or Arctic sports or Dene games and allow their hearts to grow just a little itty-bitty bit by getting exposure to different ideas, different cultures, different languages, different language groups, and different perspectives from the dominant white perspective that really is heavily guides the Mat-Su in particular, right?
Yeah.
And so, yes, I think that the intangible benefit of having these games here is that by bringing youth in particular, it's disarming for our community in a positive way. We have a bunch of youth who are passionate about their place, their traditions, their foods, their everythings, their art forms, and they're sharing that with our community. And there's something really intangibly special about that and like I say, disarming, right? That allows community members to absorb something new in a way that they may not have been open to doing in a different context.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, these games are being held in at least a suburban environment. It's just about an urban environment in the Mat-Su. And I know I travel a lot in Western Alaska and Northern Alaska, and the things that I learn in those areas, and it's quite different than the things I'm exposed to and that I learn in this urban and suburban area. And I know from Arctic Winter Games, the two Arctic Winter Games that I went to in Greenland, one thing I really remember and one of the things that was most striking was how engaged our skiers, I was working with the cross-country skiers, how engaged they were with, in particular, a group of Nunavut skiers. Our skiers were faster than the Nunavut skiers. It was pretty clear. It wasn't really even that close. Our skiers were the Nunavut kids were fascinated by how our Alaska skiers could ski so fast. And our kids were fascinated by these Nunavut kids' discussion of hunting trips that they made, seal hunting, and the fact that they went out and these kids were doing it by themselves. They were 12-year-old kids going out on the ice and hunting seals. And our kids, who were mostly from Fairbanks and the and on the road system, it was just these kids couldn't get enough. It was so fascinating for them to see that these kids lived such different lives than they did. And I think they took that home with them, and I think they will never forget it. I didn't, for sure, and I won't. The other thing that I remember was speaking with one of the Greenlandic coaches who was telling me how polar bear pants were much better than sealskin pants for hunting on the ice for a variety of reasons. Not only their warmth, but their ability to shed dirt and blood. He said, yeah, that you get blood on these polar bear pants and it just comes right off. And he said, they're amazing. And so these are things that I'll never forget.
You know, there's moments in the planning process for me that I've had these aha experiences with the indigenous cultures right in our own region that I didn't know about. And I was born and raised there. Telsha sent me, and I've listened to it a lot of times now, Telsha sent me our land acknowledgement that was recorded in the Otna language. And I hadn't heard the local indigenous language to that extent spoken in my life in the Matsu Borough. And I marvel at that a little bit, that I could be so entrenched in a region and not have had that language around me and more exposure to it in any number of settings. And so, yes, my heart grew a lot. And I love that we can shine a light on our local cultures in a way that even local people may not know the richness and the depth and the beauty that's around us right in our own Matsu Valley, that you actually don't have to go to the North Slope to experience that kind of awe-inspiring culture.
What can somebody do if you're not a member of Alaska's Arctic Winter Games team in a sports or a cultural event? You're just a person in the community and you want to get involved in this and be a spectator and come out and see a bunch of events. How does a person do that?
Well, we have ticketed events, certainly. I think opening ceremonies, our tickets are offline right now because they may be full. But there's... ticketed events are the gold medal round or the medal rounds that are happening on Thursday and Friday. And I'll let Telsha talk about her ticketed events. But all of our sporting events are free all week long. So just come. Just come and get a feel for a contingent that you want to support. Come and buy a cowbell and go out to the games and cheer on these kids. There's headquarters, Arctic Winter Games headquarters is in the Palmer Depot, downtown Palmer. There's pin trading. We have a big merch shop that's going to be going in there. Stop by. There's an alumni lounge there and a large exhibit of, and Telsha's done amazing artistic things to highlight other people. And so she's also worked with Katie Basile.
Basil.
Yep. Basil, sorry. No, I knew I didn't say it right. To do a photographic display with recordings from each of these Arctic Winter Games alumni, and that's going to be in the depot. It's going to be very special, and it's fun to see which prominent Alaskans have been involved in Arctic Winter Games and how Arctic Winter Games does grow our community leaders.
Well, if you're just joining us, I'm Adam Verrier. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer, and I'm here speaking with Amy Spargo and Telsha Overby about the Arctic Winter Games. Telsha, do you want to talk more cultural events than just the opening and closing ceremonies?
I sure will.
And how does a person get into those? I mean, this would be a great opportunity for people to come and experience some culture that they may not otherwise easily see.
Yes, 100%. On our website, there is a very comprehensive schedule under the Attend tab. And so I just want to point people in that direction to say that that outward-facing schedule is really comprehensive. And it says where all of the sporting and cultural events are happening and when. And so take a look at that and find some things that you're excited about attending and then come on out. And like Amy and you both mentioned, there are some events that are ticketed. In many cases, those are some of the cultural events that I've been working on. And two that I'm going to highlight are, of course, on Thursday, March 14th at 7 p.m., there's a Bumyuwa concert and Indigenous fashion show.
The band is from Bethel, I believe.
Bumyuwa?
Yeah, are they? I think so.
Well, they're we'll call them Alaska's premier Indigenous rock band.
Yeah, they're famous.
So their members live all over.
Okay.
Yeah. And they will serenade you with an absolutely world-class show on Thursday night. And Bobby Brower is coordinating a fashion show to start out that evening. And then local legend Ashley Young will serenade us with an opening act. So she's absolutely incredibly talented. That will be a very, very fun evening there on Thursday. Tickets are going very quickly for that one. So if you want to attend, please buy your ticket now.
Okay.
And then on Friday at 3 p.m. and at 7 p.m., the participants who've been working all week together on their gala pieces will present their show at the Glenn Massey Theater, Friday, March 15th, 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. And those are both ticketed events, and they will also very likely both sell out. So.
Okay. If you if you're thinking you'd like to go to one of these ticketed events, but you don't make your mind up until the very last second, you miss out on tickets. It sounds like you can go to almost all of the sports for free. If you show up, for example, at a speed skating event or at a biathlon race or something, you could probably be pretty confident you're going to be able to get in. You'd be able to drive over there and park and get into the event or take the bus over, I suppose, to the event.
Either one.
Okay.
Most of the events that during the week, there will be adequate parking for visitors from out of town driving their private cars, or they can park at some of our shuttle stops. And there's going to be visitors guides available everywhere that you can just pick up at our headquarters and down at the Palmer Depot and kind of get a sense of what the transportation loops are. One of the great experiences, I think it's really a northern experience that I hadn't had before when I went to Wood Buffalo that I'm really looking forward to here in Alaska is the gold medal round for hockey was between Nunavut and Alaska last Arctic Winter Games. And it was sold out. It was like a Olympic U.S.-Canada hockey game. And literally, the Alaska kids were cheering USA. The Canada kids were cheering. All the Canada teams were cheering for Nunavut. And it was the most fun. And Nunavut won, which was an incredible moment for Arctic Winter Games history even of itself because they only got a hockey rink, I think, in 2000.
Entire territory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So super fun to see where they've come as a team through the different games. And I just encourage folks to look for those gold medal rounds for hockey. There's women's and men's in two different age groups. So they're all going to be at the Menard Sports Center, and they're going to be a great time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What if you if you're listening to this show and you think, I want to take it a step further, I don't want to just come and see some events, but I'd like to volunteer. Are you a little late for that? I believe there's like background check that has to be done for volunteers. I think I looked on your webpage and I was looking at the volunteering, and that kind of needed to happen by January because you need to make sure that you have volunteers that have passed a background check and the same sort of things that would.
Yeah. So volunteerism is like another of those intangible legacy projects, because when we started, we estimated we needed 2,000 volunteers, and people would just kind of be aghast. Like, how can you manage 2,000 volunteers? And where are they going to come from? And we just started ticking away at things and had total faith in our community. And our community has showed up. Like, we hit our 2,000 mark, and we have a wait list of 600 right now.
600 volunteers that you didn't...
On the wait list.
Oh, wow.
We had to order 300 more jackets because we had such a wide variety of people, and every single the sign up that we expected we had filled. We have a software program called GEMS, Games and Event Management System, that we're using to manage all of our volunteers. And it's a little clunky for us. And so if you're listening and you're a volunteer and you haven't scheduled yourself, schedule yourself, because we did have a great turnout. And now our challenge is getting them organized and in the right place and at the right time. And we've done lots of trainings, background checks. We're really committed to youth safety in this in all different kinds of ways. And so we're training all of our volunteers in safe sports, which is a sexual abuse, harassment prevention, hazing prevention, bullying prevention program.
Yeah, Safe Sport is a program that's used across a variety of sports.
Yeah.
I have to take Safe Sport to be involved in the skiing things that I'm involved with. So, yeah.
Yeah,
it's very broadly used.
So all of our people in official roles had that credential. We decided to broaden that, and all of our volunteers, as a legacy to our community, now have had at least the bare bones of training in that as well.
Okay, so there's obviously a lot of interest from the community in this. You're selling out events. You have 600 people on the wait list to volunteer. So obviously, people know about Arctic Winter Games, are interested in being involved. I have a question for you, Telsha. What caused you to get interested in getting involved in Arctic Winter Games in the first place a couple of years ago?
Yeah, that's such a great question. I was actually not thinking about Arctic Winter Games at all. I was hiking in Haleakala when I got a phone call from my dear friend Kim Solian at the borough, who asked me to get involved with this wild project that she had going on, that she had put in the bid to host the Arctic Winter Games for the Matsu community. And I have a background in theater and in event planning and production. So my partner and I hosted the Granite Creek Pickers Retreat for 15 years out in the valley, which is like a very fun event. And we weren't going to do it that year. And Kim thought, there must be a vacuum in your event planning life. And so she asked me to get involved, and I thought, I'll throw my name in the ring. And they picked me. So
has the organization of the events that you've been involved with has been different than you thought it might be? Are there any big surprises that that you've come across in the last year or two that?
That is such a great question, and there haven't been any major surprises in what I foresaw as my role in hosting these big events. There have been a lot of surprises in what it would look like to build an organization with a group of strangers. I'll just say that. But for my parts and pieces, I feel like it feels very much akin to putting on several theatrical productions all at simultaneously. And they're all coming to a head right all at exactly the same time, and they're about to launch next week. And it's very funny. I do feel like I reached the peak of my stress last week.
Okay.
And it's funny because I got very, very sick also last week. And so I really think that like my peak stress and my come down off of that has already happened. And I feel uniquely poised to enter next week and the games with joy.
You're able to glide on in.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
High fives around the studio.
Yeah, that I am coming into a week of really pure joy. I cannot wait for the youth to come. I've been having meetings with them and with their managers and with all of these other people, like my production team, right, for 2 years. And I have so much confidence in those folks and the parts and pieces that they have to play and the relationships. that we have built together in the cultural area that I just feel very, very excited
that
for the next.
That you're going to be able to actually enjoy it yourself.
I will be able to enjoy it myself. Yeah. And that feels very, very, very good to me. Mm. Yeah.
And Amy, you're the chair of the board, so I would think that you might not be getting much sleep lately. I don't know how stressful it is to be in your position,
yeah.
But what drew you to the Arctic Winter Games?
So I retired in 2020 from the school district, and the borough manager called me in the summer of 2021, and he said the borough got the bid to host the Arctic Winter Games. We're looking for somebody to chair the board. And I thought about it, and I really wanted an opportunity to pay it forward. I'd had a great career. My kids had had a great experience in the borough. I was home and healthy and had energy and time. And I thought, this is just exactly what I needed. I believed in the mission of Arctic Winter Games, of really promoting healthy activities for kids and honoring Indigenous communities and bringing people together to build relationships and solve Northern problems. And so I was all in. It has been a bigger deal than I ever imagined, but not worse, just harder in a lot of ways. I think, in all honesty, we have this idea that communities are more divided than they're divided. And so when people come together and say yes to the same thing, it's really good for us. But it's harder because we're out of practice for it, frankly. And we've just had to work through a lot of internal diversity issues, as well as just being in a community that hasn't fully come together for one project for a long time. And just coming out of the pandemic and in our political world, cooperation's hard right now, but it's worth it. It's so worth it. And I think the MATSU's poised to continue on this trajectory, that the response of the community for volunteering just fills my heart with hope. I've seen what happens to the kids when they come and how they grow. And I know that's going to fill other people's hearts with hope when they see what this experience does. So I'm excited. I'm ready. I stay up at night worrying about the money. I'm the finance person. And so that's really what keeps me up, is worrying about fiscal gaps and things. I have total faith in the staff and the volunteers and the planners and all that. So,
well, it's of all the events in the North, in Alaska, that I love. I love winter sports, and I'm involved in a lot of them. But Arctic Winter Games is maybe number one on my list of really cool events, and not only because of the variety of sports that's involved, but also the cross-cultural communication, as you discussed, and the cross-cultural events, the artistic events that are involved, and how the athletes, the majority of participants come for athletics, but they learn so much about cultures of other regions. And I think it's the most amazing event in the North that I know of, since I've been involved in moving to Alaska 30 years ago. So I'm looking forward to the Arctic Winter Games. I won't be able to be here. I'm disappointed. I won't be in Alaska that week. I have to be out of Alaska that week. But in the future, I'm hoping to be involved in Arctic Winter Games again in the future, as I have been in the past.
This might be a good time to plug our live stream for you then.
Oh, you have a live stream.
We have a live stream, and Hometown Live is going to be our streaming partner, and it's free. And we're going to be promoting that everywhere. So you actually, wherever you're at, could tune into Arctic Winter Games and experience it as it's happening, or on demand. And there'll be a link on our website, and then you'll jump you to another website. And so if you can't watch the opening ceremonies live, you can watch it on demand.
Okay, then we will make sure to have that also on our webpage on the Outdoor Explorer website.
Oh, good.
Here at KSK.
Okay.
So the
Home
people
Team
can
Live, right?
Home Team Live.
Home
what did
team
I say?
Live.
Hometown. Oh, yeah. Home
no.
Team Live.
Home Team Live. Okay.
Thanks.
Well, Telsha Overby and Amy Spargo, thank you so much for coming in and talking to me. I think we've just about run out of time. So I want to thank you both for coming in and talking about the Arctic Winter Games with me ahead of a busy week for you guys.
Thanks so much for having us, Adam.
I really appreciate it. It's great to be here.
Well, you've been listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA. I would also like to thank our producer, Eric Bork. And from all of the hosts here on Outdoor Explorer, I'm Adam Verrier, and I'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.